it's closer to the West African percussion pieces. And that's why, for me, that was the easiest to play, even though it's one of the most difficult ones technically. But because it uses similar technique, African pianism techniques to the West African pieces, in a way it was easier to perform than the rest of the pieces. It's a dance, it's a joy to play this music. And I've also worked now, I'm working now with Ubuntu Ensemble, who are performing the strings version of these miniatures. And it's fascinating always to discover new inflections of this music.
Hi, you're listening to Conversations with Musicians with Leah Rosewin. This podcast strives to inspire you through the personal stories of a diversity of musicians with in-depth conversations and great music that reveal the depth and breadth to a life in music. Concert pianist Rebecca Omordia has just released her second African Pianism album, Volume 2, which was just named Editor's Choice in the Gramophone magazine, and it is a wonderful and fascinating, beautiful kaleidoscope of piano works from West Africa, North Africa, South Africa, and East Africa. Rebecca spoke to me about her extensive research about these composers, varied styles, and the different traditional music traditions, which are often at the heart of this music. We talked about her experiences growing up in Romania with a Romanian mother and a Nigerian father. Now based in London, Rebecca spoke to me about the African concert series at Wigmore Hall and many of her collaborations, including Erilyn Wallen, whose piano concerto, written for Rebecca, is featured in this podcast, along with excerpts from several of the works on the African Pianism album, Volume 2. Like all my episodes, you can watch this on my YouTube channel or listen to the podcast on all the podcast platforms. And I've also linked the transcript to my website, leahrosewin.com. The podcast theme music was commissioned from composer Nick Cold, and you can use the timestamps to navigate the episode. Before we jump into our conversation, I wanted to let you know that I have a new way you can support this independent podcast through a great collection of merch with a very cool, unique, and expressive design from artist Steffi Kelly. You'll find that link in the description of the episode. This weekly podcast is in season 4, and I send out an email newsletter where you can get access to sneak peeks of upcoming guests. Have a look at the description of this episode, where you'll find all the links, including the store for the very cool shirts, mugs, and more, and the support link to buy this independent podcaster a coffee. Now to Rebecca Omordia. Hi, Rebecca. Thanks so much for joining me here today.
Hi, Leah. Thank you for having me on your...
It's really an honor to meet you, and you're such an amazing pianist, and what you're doing with Repertoire 2 is so inspiring. So you've just released this new album, African Pianism Volume 2, and I had found your work when you had the first volume, and this is such a beautiful volume. I've really enjoyed listening to it. So we'll be digging into that and some of your history and other projects, but maybe we'll start with some of this album. Now, the term African Pianism was coined by Akin Ewba.
Yes, Akin Ewba.
So he died in 2020. Had you met him?
I was in touch with him at the beginning of my research over 10 years ago, and he sent me a lot of his music, and we discussed about my project, but I had never actually met him.
Okay. So he was a distinguished Nigerian composer and pianist and musicologist,
yes,
correct?
Yes, he was. In fact, he was part of the second generation of composers that developed the African art music style, the African art music genre as a new classical genre. So he was a pioneer of African art music alongside other West African composers.
So I wanted to include some of his music from your album, and I was having trouble choosing because I really loved it, like all the Wakarduru, the different numbers. But I thought maybe number one. And you have his music on the first volume as well.
I have music by Akin Ewba. I have three Yoruba songs without words on volume one. But volume two brings together some of the Wakaduru style.
So do you want to speak to that music before people hear number one?
Yes. Well, Akin Ewba is one of the composers that developed the African pianism style. He coined the term, and he documented this new style of piano playing that expresses certain features of African traditional music. In his piano music in his Wakaduru study. He explores Nigerian folk tunes, Nigerian Hilaf songs, as well various ways of expressing the drumming technique of the West African drums on the piano. And the Wakaduru study number one is based on one of Nigeria's Hilaf songs.
You're about to hear Wakaduru, Study in African Pianism number one by Akin Eyoba from Rebecca Omordia's album African Pianism Volume 2 on the Somme Recordings label. You'll find the link to buy and stream the music in the description of this podcast. Thank you. Okay, thanks for that beautiful performance. I wanted to ask you, you know, your experience as a child growing up in Romania was still under Ceausescu's regime, and you had a pretty traumatic experience with your family having to leave. Do you want to speak to that?
Yes, well, it was growing up in Romania, also under Ceausescu's regime, was both good thing and a bad thing. Good thing from a musical perspective is that Romania has a very old tradition of classical music. So I had access to the Western classical music at one of the highest levels, and education, musical education is also free in Romania. So this was one of the good things. The negative thing was the fact that mixed race marriages, my father Nigerian, my mother Romanian, they were not socially accepted. And in fact, they were not accepted at all by the regime. If one of the Romanian, the Romanians would marry a foreigner, they would have to move to the foreigner's country. So they were not allowed to stay in the country. That did not work for my parents. And of course, it eventually created a lot of problems. And in 1989, when I was six, we were deported from the country. One night, in fact, we were arrested and we were taken to, you know, an interrogation room, when my parents had to sign some documents that we would leave the country within 48 hours. So that was quite a traumatic experience for a six-year-old, and especially I was a very happy child generally, and I was full of energy, and I used to love to play a lot, well, as most children. So having to go through that without understanding exactly what was happening, we had had problems, you know, with my father not being allowed visa to be in the country, and all sorts of immigration problems. But that was a completely different level of traumatic experiences for a child. So we were deported. We ended up in Yugoslavia, then in Greece. And this was even a few months before Ceausescu's regime ended. And we were abroad for about almost a year, and we were allowed eventually to come back to the country because my sister had been left behind. So my parents had to return for her, of course. Yes.
Oh.
So, you know, my parents, they had, their feelings were mixed. They would have not returned to Romania, but they had to return because of my sister. So we returned to Romania, and that was also the year where I would have had to start school, primary school. So in the end, you know, they decided to enroll me in school, and my parents settled. My father eventually received his citizenship a couple of years later, of course, after a lot of bureaucracy. And but I was enrolled in school. My coming into contact with music, because that's also quite was quite a crucial moment. We had the piano at home because, again, as I mentioned, Romania has a very old tradition of classical music, and a lot of the families, whether they were musical or not, they would have an instrument at home. The children will learn to play music. You will perform in various, you know, if it was not a professional setting, it would be amateur setting, but you will have access to instruments, and or you perform in church. And this was also one of the reasons we had the piano home. And while I had never taken any lessons, I was always playing around the piano, and I was playing by ear, and I loved music. And when we were deported and we were in Yugoslavia, and there was one moment we were in a train station waiting. I'm not sure if it was for a train or for, we were still looking for accommodation. So we had to sleep in various, you know, squatting in various places. So there was a violinist that she was playing in the train station. And she looked to me homeless. But the music she performed, to me, it seemed so sincere and so moving, that for a moment, you know, that was, everything had stopped, all the dark, the gray, you know, feeling, and my parents, they were so serious, and things were horrible for me. I was completely, you know, taken out of my world, away from my sister. I was very close to my grandparents, my whole world. So music became a very important element, I would say, for my existence. So when we returned to Romania many, 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 many months later, and I was supposed to enroll in to school, primary school, and my parents, my father being a doctor, and as a Nigerian doctor, he in Nigeria, you must, you know, if you are going to become a serious person, you need to have a profession, which is a doctor or engineer or lawyer, and being a musician was not accepted. But I remember, so I was enrolled in the primary, local primary school. I remember I went to my parents and I told them, it was literally a few days before, you know, the first day of school started. And I told them that I wanted to go to the specialist music school because I wanted to become a pianist. Of course, for them, this was a huge surprise. For me, being so small and so restless, I was, for them, or according to them, I was a very restless child, always looking for trouble. And me coming with this new idea was something extremely eccentric. But at the same time, they knew that I was very stubborn. So if I had made up my mind about something, and I was very serious about wanting to go to the music school and learning to play piano, eventually they agreed, and we just made the arrangements for me to be enrolled in the music school. Of course, there's also a long story there, because, you know, with a specialist music school, you need to have take an audition, have an exam, take an exam to see if you're musical at all. But of course, I had missed all the deadlines since it was really late. Through a coincidence of my mother having her best friend as a singing teacher there, we managed to find a place for me. I was without the piano teacher for many, many months because of that. Nobody wanted me. You know, a child that looked completely different and had just appeared from nowhere. eventually we found a teacher and I started having piano lessons, and that's when it all began.
Yeah. And soon after you began these piano lessons, he enrolled you in a competition, and you did very well, correct?
Yes, this was months into taking the piano lessons, because it was a regular tradition that attending a specialist music school, you already, they train you right from the beginning to become a professional musician. And so a professional pianist in this case. So you start taking part in all these national competitions, and you learn about the travel, what it means, how to travel to perform, and in very competitive environment. So I was entered after a few months, and my piano teacher saw that I made great progress now. I love to play the piano. My parents were also very excited, and they were thrilled that I was very keen to practice, which also kept me quiet and in a good place, away from trouble. So they also supported that. And I entered the competition. We traveled, I think, in west of Romania, and I performed among many children. Of course, you know, everywhere I would turn up, people would be like, "Who's this? Oh, look how she looks, oh, where she from?" But gradually, you know, I won the first competition and I appeared on national television, which again was, you know, during the communist regime, before Ceausescu's regime had ended, we didn't have access to television. The only broadcasts that would be on TV were, you know, communist broadcasts about the dictator or some sort of, you know, where they're trying to communicate some press, a conference about Ceausescu, whatever he was doing. But now people had a national channel, and they had access to watch concerts, to see what was happening culturally in Romania. So suddenly they see this young, black, according to them, black child playing the piano. So, of course, I became famous, and famous locally and nationally. And then every year I was entered competitions, and I will win, or sometimes I'll get lesser prizes, but I will always gain something. And I was working very hard, and my parents were supporting that, which was very important. And it became my life and my full-time activity.
Thought it would be interesting to talk about more of the album. Almost all the composers you chose were born in Africa, except Florence Price. You decided to include one of her pieces. Is that because it's based on a spiritual and do you want to speak to that?
Yes. Well, first of all, Africa is patriarchal. So there are not many, if at all, women composers from Africa. Most of the composers of African descent, they're from Africa diaspora. And so I believe, you know, the purpose of my album series is to create awareness of this repertoire and also hopefully to inspire female musicians to write, African female musicians to write music. Among the female musicians from the African diaspora, Florence Price's piano music, I find it most appealing. I think the Fantaisie Negre is a very powerful work. The fact that it's based on a Negro spiritual, of course, that also makes an element for my African pianism album, because that's also one of the conditions of African pianism style to include, even though her piano music is European in style. But the fact that it features a Negro spiritual, it goes with my themed African pianism album. So I think I love Florence Price's piano music. But I think she has so much to say and says it so well from a pianist point of view. I think it also creates awareness for the African musicians based in Africa about the music of the African diaspora composers, and also to also inspire them and inspire female musicians to write more music. So that's the main reason for including Florence Price on this album.
This is an excerpt from Fantaisie Negre in E minor by Florence Price. You'll find the link to buy and stream this album in the description of this podcast. I understand she wrote so much music and there's a lot to go through. Have you discovered some of her music that other people haven't recorded yet?
I don't think so. I haven't researched Florence Price's piano music the way I've researched African composers, because there's not enough time in a day. even for the African composers, and plus, Florence Price now benefits from great awareness. Many people perform her music, her piano music, her orchestral music. So she's become a well-known composer. The reason for including her in my program is because I love the music of African-American. I love Florence Price's piano music. And it's, you know, every art must be political. And I think in this case, including Florence Price on my program, apart from my great admiration for her works and for her style of writing, is also a political reason for bringing awareness to African composers about what African musicians or musicians of African heritage can achieve, especially female musicians, because that's something that it's not been explored in Africa.
Mm-hmm. So when you perform in Africa, Rebecca, are you accepted as a woman who's also a foreigner?
Depends. For instance, in Nigeria, you claim your father's country or your father's place where he, or your father's ethnic group. And in Nigeria, I'm seen as Nigerian. I'm not seen as necessarily as foreigner. I'm not. Of course, they see me mixed. They call sometimes Oyibo, but I am in Nigeria, I'm home. In other places in Africa, I've been to North Africa, I've been to South Africa, I am seen as mixed. or I'm seen as a dual heritage. And also because of my upbringing, mm-hmm. especially my education, of being, you know, a graduate of the Romanian music school, that also brings a great influence on who I am also as identity.
Let's see. Speaking of North Africa, Salim Dada, the Algerian miniatures, Miniature Algérienne, were originally for string quartet?
Well, yes. They were originally for string quartet. Salim Dada has also arranged them for orchestral, string orchestra. We are performing them at the African Concert Series for string quintet. And then he has also published them and arranged them, very successful arrangement for piano solo. And I believe some of the miniatures, especially number 2, has been performed a lot by various pianists, but nobody has recorded these pieces until I discovered them. And it was a very interesting discovery. My first contact with North African music was through the Moroccan Nocturnes on my Volume 1, African Pianism, Nocturnes by Nabil Bedojalil, which mm-hmm. was a fascinating discovery. Oriental, as he calls, as the composer calls them, Oriental Nocturnes. So this was fascinating. And of course, for Volume 2, I wanted to explore North Africa further, and I went to Algeria, and that's where I discovered Salim Dada. I had known some of his miniatures, especially the number 2. Some pianists have performed it, even in the African Concert Series. So I wanted to have a look at the whole set, and he sent me the music, and I thought it would have been quite similar musical language to the Moroccan pieces, because it's North Africa, but in fact it was something completely different. That also shows the diversity of the African continent, that there's no one country within the same region that is the same or has the same musical tradition. So I had to learn a lot of new things, new rhythms, new ways of phrasing. And of course, thanks to the composer, and he's helped me deciphering the style of these pieces.
Okay. Well, I really love them, and I had trouble picking one to include. I thought we could include Soirée au Gard.
Yes, that's the last one, number 5. Yes, that's one terrific piece. In fact, it's, for me, it's closer to the West African percussion pieces. And that's why, for me, that was the easiest to play, even though it's one of the most difficult ones technically. But because it uses similar technique, African pianism techniques to the West African pieces, in a way it was easier to perform than the rest of the pieces. It's a dance, it's a joy to play this music. And I've also worked now, I'm working now with Ubuntu Ensemble, who are performing the strings version of these miniatures. And it's fascinating always to discover new inflections of this music. You know, there's always a way of translating the physical plane of the piece to what you hear, to what you read, to what you hear, to what the audience needs to receive. So there's a long process. And even though I have recorded this piece, it's a continuous rediscovery of the rhythms and of the melodies. And that's how you know why when the composer is a genius.
You're about to hear an excerpt from Miniature Algérienne, number 5, Soirée au Hogar, by Salim Dada. Well, maybe we could include, sometimes it's good to include just a short clip of something to give people a taste, and then they'll go. Of course, everything will be linked directly in the description of this podcast. There's also the Crépuscule sur la Baie d'Alger, which is another one of those movements, which is very different.
Yes, that's very different. And in fact, that piece, it's inspired by the Algerian genocide. And I think it's a very haunting piece. Yes, it's a very powerful piece. It starts with a dance, one of the Algerian dances, and then the middle section, it makes a reference. I know this from the composer himself, through the Algerian genocide and through what the Algerian people experienced. So that's why I think, you know, the whole 5 Algerian miniatures is it captures the essence of the Algerian people's experiences, their music, their joys, their sorrows, their life.
Next, you're about to hear an excerpt from Miniature Algérienne number 3, Crépuscule sur la Baie d'Alger, by Salim Dada. Thank you. Let's speak about your African concert series at Wigmore Hall. You began this a few years ago.
Yes.
And you're including choral music and chamber music.
Yes. In fact, the African concert series was an extension of my first album, Ekele, Piano Music by African Composers, which opened the opportunity to launch the African Concert Series. This was, the album was released in 2018 and the African Concert Series was launched in 2019. When I had started researching this music, I discovered so many works, not only the piano music, but songs and chamber works. And the initial plan was to have an album series, exactly what I'm doing now. I had the opportunity to launch the African Concert Series and I started programming the works I discovered. And now we are in its sixth year, the African Concert Series. This is its sixth year and we're resident at the Wigmore Hall. And we have themed concerts with chamber music, African art songs, choral music, music from various regions of Africa, music from North Africa, also music from the African diaspora. We are very fortunate to also have Wigmore Hall hosting the series.
But when you started and you put out your album Ekele, it was on, you self-funded it?
Yes. Well, in fact, I've self-funded all the albums. But I've also self-funded, yes, and I've also self-funded the African Concert Series first couple of years. This was pioneering work in its true sense. And yes, but later we received support, great support. We received grants from the Arts Council England in 2021 and 2022, also in 2023. And that's when the series in 2023 made Wigmore Hall its London home. And it has received support ever since. But I think with every pioneering work, someone has to make some sacrifices. It was a project I strongly believed in. And I've given it a lot of work and a lot of personal investment as well. And I have no regrets. Yes, in fact, it's extremely rewarding to see that now it's received such great support. And so many people are discovering such fascinating repertoire.
Yes, yes. Hi, just a short break from the episode, which I hope you're enjoying so far. I wanted to let you know that I have a new way you can support this independent podcast through a beautiful collection of merch with a very cool, unique, and expressive design from artist Steffi Kelly. You'll find that link in the description of the episode. If you want to check out over 100 episodes you may have missed, in addition to your podcast player or YouTube, I have an extensive website, leahroseman.com, with show notes, transcripts, the complete catalog of episodes, and you can sign up there for my weekly newsletter to get access to sneak peeks of upcoming guests. Please do share your favorite episodes with your friends, follow me on social media and share my posts, and if you can spare a few dollars to help support the series, that would be amazing. You'll find that link in the show notes along with the merch store. I'm an independent podcaster and I really do need the help of my listeners. Now back to the episode. So when you went to England to study, you won the Delius Prize in 2009. And that set off a three-year partnership with cellist Julian Lloyd Webber. Do you want to speak to that and playing British music with him?
Yes. In fact, British music has been another one of my major projects. But in 2009, I was just finishing my master's, in fact, advanced postgraduate diploma at Birmingham Conservatoire. The Delius Trust, or Delius Society, they were hosting the Delius competition, the music of the British composer Frederick Delius. And so I entered the competition with some of his piano pieces, and I also performed some Ravel because you were allowed to perform contemporary composers. And Julian Lloyd Webber adjudicated this competition, and he loved my playing, especially that my performance had also included some music with violin and piano. So it also showed some of my chamber music qualities. And so after the competition, he came to me and he suggested that maybe if he ever needed a pianist, he would call me, which he did a few days later. And in fact, it coincided with the some anniversary of the British composer Frederick Delius and also John Ireland, was 50 years from their death, from John Ireland's death. And we performed on BBC Radio 3, music by Frederick Delius and John Arland. And that's when our partnership started. Julian Lloyd Webber has been an advocate of British music for many, many years. So it was only natural that our recitals and our programs will feature a lot of British music for cello and piano. And we started performing all over the UK. We toured in many important venues. And this was also another fascinating discovery for me because I hadn't known any of the British composers until then. And the discovery, also the piano music of John Arland, was another project which in the end led to a doctoral thesis on the piano music of John Arland and British music. So that was parallel with my research in the African repertoire. So the two projects, parallel, separate projects going hand in hand.
Yeah.
At the same time.
And your doctoral thesis, you published it as a book in Romania, correct?
Yes, because it was written in Romania, and I did my doctoral thesis at the National University in Bucharest, Music University in Bucharest. That, as a result, we published the thesis as a book later on at the end of my program about the piano music of John Arland.
Are there any thoughts to translate it into English and publish it in English?
Of course, that's something that I have been thinking about, but it's probably for later on in my career. That might be something that I will further develop. But at the moment, I'm mainly focused on the African music, which is has become, you know, the center of my career, performing the music, recording, curating concerts of African repertoire, which also requires a lot of research. So while I'm still performing some British music, this has been put a bit on a hold for now.
And in 2019, you formed a duo with the South African bass soloist Leon Bosch, and you made some recordings with him as well.
Yes, in fact, I had been very, very familiar with his name because he's a legendary double bassist and he's very known in the UK, especially in the UK. But when I recorded the Kele, my first piano album of African composers, he heard me perform this music on BBC Radio 3. So he contacted me and he said, well, we met and we discussed that he'd commissioned so many works from South African composers. And so he was interested in us collaborating on a recording project. So even though our initial project was to record the South African composers, he was at the time working on another British music project, and also having, as I had the previous experience of performing British music, this was a natural way for us to start our work together. We recorded British double bass, we recorded the South African double bass, and then we continued with our work together through the African Concert Series platform. He's commissioned works from at least 100 of South African composers. And he's premiered a lot of these composers at the African Concert Series. His Ubuntu ensemble of musicians from South Africa that are based in the UK have also been pioneering this repertoire. And they have performed many times at the African Concert Series. So my work with Leon Bosch has been also as duo partners, but also through the African Concert Series, continuing this pioneering work of bringing to the audience, to London audience, the music by composers from South Africa and also from other regions of Africa.
You know, Rebecca, it's interesting when you said 100 composers from South Africa, my eyebrows kind of went up because I'm Canadian, and of course we play a lot of Canadian composers and sometimes from other countries. But I think with new music and classical music, it gets a little siloed because each country kind of supports their composers. But it's wonderful to learn about all this music that's being written all over the globe.
Yes, there's so much music and there's so many interesting works, so much fun to play. And they're also, you know, so... and I was raised in the Western classical tradition, and I've performed Western composers, and there's so much piano repertoire. as pianists, we're very fortunate that there's so much to play. But I think, you know, there comes a day when you should look further. And it also helps you develop as a musician, knowing beyond the what it's called now, the standard repertoire that has been played and recorded and played and played, and there's nothing to rediscover. And I think it's fascinating when someone comes and says, look, this is music from my country, and let's have a look, let's have a listen. And it's not only a musical way of, you know, growing as an artist, but it's you also learn about the culture and the traditions of that respective country, because that's always reflected in the music the composers write. So it's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you about your connection with Erlyn Wallen, the well-known British composer, because she wrote a piece for you, the concerto that you recorded.
Yes, Erlyn Wallen is a genius of a composer. She had been featured at the African Concert Series in the past. We had some of her chamber music performed. But she's a tutor, a composition tutor at Birmingham Conservatoire. And I'm an alumna of the Birmingham Conservatoire. So in 2019, Julian Weber, who was a principal of Birmingham Conservatoire, he commissioned a piano concerto from Erlyn Wallen for me to premiere with Birmingham Conservatoire Symphony Orchestra. Of course, the pandemic delayed the project. And in a way, in the beginning, it felt as if it would never happen. But this piano concerto was written during pandemic, during lockdown. And Erlyn Wallen, we were working together on it. She would write things. She would send it to me. We will talk so much on the phone about the style. The last movement of the concerto is, in fact, based on a Romanian theme from where I was born.
Okay.
So it's a very personal piece, and was also a piece that connected us during a moment of solitude. She wrote it when she was in a lighthouse totally alone in Scotland. I was stuck in my flat in London. So it's a piece that connected us. It took longer to have it premiered, but also because of that, it later created the opportunity of having it recorded with the BBC Concert Orchestra. So it is a very personal work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really loved that last movement. It's called Joyful. And I was wondering, do you want to talk to her and the recording company if they'd want to, we could feature it on this podcast?
Yes, yes, I will. I'm sure they will be very happy to have it featured. It's based on, I was born in southern Romania. It's the region called Oltenia. Of course, Romania, it has the same language, but the regions, they have different populations of different temperament, I would say. You know, many times people would say, how would my mother and my father get along with each other coming from such different cultures? But the culture of Romanian, of the southern Romania, is quite similar to the Igbo culture where my father comes from. So people, they're very joyous, exactly as the piece, as the song is. They're full of life. They're also very temperamental. So Erlyn really managed to capture this in this piano concerto in the last movement. And this is, in fact, a traditional dance, danced always at celebrations, at birthdays, weddings. And it's fascinating to watch and great fun to be part of. And also as a pianist, great fun to play it alongside the Stellar Orchestra.
This is the last movement of Erlyn Wallen's Piano Concerto with Rebecca Omordia and the BBC Concert Orchestra, conducted by John Andrews on the Resonus label. You'll find this album, linked to Rebecca Omordia's website, in the description of this podcast. Well, it'd be great if you could come to Canada and play it with my orchestra. Maybe that'll happen.
Yes, you never know. I'd love that. Yes.
I wanted to ask you, so your dad was a physician, and he at first didn't want you to be serious about music, but his father was a famous traditional flute player in Nigeria.
Yes, exactly. You know, that's something that I have been even discussing with my family recently quite a lot. It's because, you know, if we think of the history of the colonialism, my grandfather, he belonged to the generation that believed in what is called native. They believed in the ancestors. They believed in the power of the ancestors. This music is a connection to the ancestors. It is said, you know, that when an Igbo flute plays, it has action in the afterworld and in the present, in the physical world, in the spirit world and in the physical world. So the music is inspired by, you know, rituals, by various traditional events. But my father's generation is the generation that was had a great colonial influence. They became Christian, they were churchgoers, they believed in having a profession, science profession, lawyer, doctor, you know, physician, engineer. So while my father told me so much about my grandfather, and for him it was also when I became a professional musician, you know, after being awarded a lot of prizes and become quite an established pianist, he would understand that, you know, I had inherited this musical quality from my grandfather, and he used to talk about it a lot. But being a folk player, for me, I didn't understand it so much, because my parents, I grew up in a church. I grew up in a Baptist church. We were, my father used to preach in various churches. So we were very into, you know, the Western type of upbringing. So I only, you know, discovered what it meant to be a traditional player when I started researching this repertoire, the African repertoire. And I discovered the meaning of the instruments, because most of the African composers inspired their works from traditional music or traditional instruments. We have a concert at the Wigmore Hall on 20th of July, African Art Music for Woodwind, a music for Western flute inspired from the African traditional flutes. And there's so much knowledge in that music. Mm-hmm. And to be able to perform this music, you need to know exactly the context this music was written, or the instruments this music was performed on originally. So there is a link, and there is a different experience that, you know, different generations have had. And I am grateful for the friends I have. They've taught me a lot of... been persuasive, being disciplined, which I would have never become a professional musician without. But then I think sometimes I now draw my inspiration from my grandfather's side, because that's where this music comes from. Mm-hmm. And that's in the end where we come from. So, yes.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering, Rebecca, because obviously you've worked so hard, like you say, discipline. But you showed such talent at a young age, having had no piano lessons and then quickly doing so well in Romania. And I think I'd read that you don't tend to feel nerves, or you didn't used to feel nervous. Has that changed over time?
Well, I first started becoming nervous when I was a teenager. I have been. I've had nerves throughout my life. I've always had nerves, in fact. And I think it's part of who you are as a human being. Any performance, you're supposed to be nervous. If you're not nervous before a concert, something strange. it's a natural way of, you know, dealing with pressure, I believe. Be nervous. It's a hormonal. I think it's a hormonal thing. But the moment I put my shoes, concert shoes on, and I'm stepping on the stage, that's all gone. that's nerves, being nervous turns into adrenaline, turns into being inspired, turns into communicating with your audience. So I think it's part of the process, you know, the same way you feel, you have emotions, which is normal as a human being to have an emotions, have nerves, being excited, being all the feelings we experience, and I leave all my feelings to the fullest. I was a bit nervous about our interview because I don't think I'm always a great communicator, or, you know, the way I express myself sometimes verbally is not always very clear, I think, but it's normal. We all have different abilities, and I think having nerves is natural.
And in terms of memory, when you perform solo, you normally perform from memory?
Yes, I think it's very important to perform from memory as much as you can, because that gives you a freedom in performing. The piece, for me personally, when I perform from memory, the piece becomes mine. And I can do, of course, you know, you've learned the piece, you've learned the basics of that composer's musical language, but then you have the freedom of, especially on the stage where you have the adrenaline, this what will be sometimes called nerves, you get sometimes inspired to bring out things that, or you hear things that you wouldn't normally hear during a practice session. So I am pro performing mm-hmm. from memory, because I am learning, constantly learning new music, and I'm playing so much. Sometimes I perform with music because there's just too much information that the brain needs time to assimilate everything to be able to reproduce it perfectly, I would say.
Do you use a tablet with a foot pedal when you're performing with music these days?
This is something that I'm exploring now. I'm quite late to join the technology movement, but this is something I'm exploring now because it's been difficult, you know, finding page turners and with rehearsing and all that. It's quite difficult. It takes time to adjust. I had second experience of performing with a foot pedal was that the pedal wasn't working, and we ended up looking for a page turner that was just literally sliding. The iPad, and it was horrible. So I don't like that. Also, from learning from memory, I don't like to learn from memory from the iPad, because usually when I print music, if I play with printed music, you have a better visual memory of how the music lays. So, but technology, you know, sometimes we have to just join the wagon. So.
I thought it might be nice to include a clip of the opening piece on this album of your African Pianism Volume 2 is Cry of Joy, Elita. And can you say the name of the composer who's also a pianist, I believe?
Yes. Composer from Ethiopia, Girma Ifrashiwa. He's a fabulous pianist and also a composer. Mm-hmm. He'll also perform at the Wigmo Hall next year. He studied in Bulgaria. As a pianist, and I think he also had some composition classes there. So his style of writing really fits under the hand for a pianist. He writes very virtuosic music inspired by the krar music. Krar is an Ethiopian traditional instrument. So that's why you have the piece has a lot of ornamentation, because this is characteristic to the krar music. It's a beautiful piece, and it's a true cry of joy.
That instrument you just mentioned, what kind of instrument is it?
It's a harp stringed instrument, the krar, K-R-A-R.
Okay. Is it similar to the kora?
It's much smaller in size. It actually looks like a harp, like a small harp. The sound would be between a harp and a kora, but it's got a different technique of playing. It's I think it's more similar to the European harp in terms of the way you pluck the strings than the actual kora, that they play it with thumb and with mainly thumb and bow hands. So I haven't played the instrument, and we've had it in the African Concert Series featured with an Ethiopian ensemble. But it's beautiful music. It's a completely different style to anything I have played until now. So even though the music looks European on the in the score, and it might feel European when you perform it, when you're learning it, I still had to learn, listen to some Ethiopian music to understand the phraseology of this dialogue. But it's beautiful, yeah.
You're about to hear an excerpt from Elilta, Cry of Joy, by Jerma Ifrashewa, and this is the first track on Rebecca Omordia's African Pianism, Volume 2. Yeah, you mentioned as a small child you had all this energy and music allowed you to, you know, keep yourself busy. And with this project, I mean, it's endless, right? There's just so much. I'm sure you've already started research for your next album.
Well, in fact, we have another album coming out in the fall, you know, November. Also part of my African piano album. But this is, it will be songs, African art songs. We are exploring the African, the West African songs. It's with a fascinating soprano. She's a Nigerian, Omo Bello. She grew up in Nigeria, but then she was trained at the Paris Conservatoire. So she has this beautiful voice, and she's so versatile. And she's learned, you know, how, all the pronunciation, all the various languages. The album, I'll tell you more when it's released. But this is the next in my project of album releases. Of course, there's enough music for another African Pianism Volume 3, or there's also chamber music, something that I am looking to exploring. So there's a lot of work. Okay.
Wonderful. Maybe you can introduce me to that singer. She might want to come on the podcast. That would be wonderful.
Yes, I'm sure she'll be happy to talk about our project together. We worked together for a whole year before this album, before we recorded the album. We had to learn together. Of course, it was beneficial, you know, my experience of recording African music previously. So, and playing the piano part sounded completely different to how she had performed it previously with other pianists. It was a fascinating experience for herself and for me as to discovering. Some of the same composers which are from African pianism, but discovering their songs, because sometimes it's a completely different approach to the music, and also the song itself as a form of art is one of the most natural ways of expression of African people. Song is their language, their musical language. So it's great to have recorded the African art songs.
I'm curious, in the church that you grew up with in Romania, which was Baptist, was there gospel music in Romanian that you were singing?
No, there were hymns. There were a lot of hymns. It was quite a traditional church, the type of church where men sit separately from the women. And I was the child that even in my teenage, sometimes I'll go and sit next to my father in the men's section and people will be like. So, but the they had a mandolin orchestra. And they used to perform, yes, yes. So I had enrolled in the mandolin to learn mandolin classes. But this was after I already played the piano. And then we discovered that playing the mandolin to bruise my fingertips. So I quit because I wanted to be a pianist.
Yeah.
But the music, it was more traditional European music. I wouldn't say it was traditional Romanian music because they didn't use the folk music for their hymns and for their church songs. It was more of the what we'll find in maybe Anglican churches here in the UK, the same similar type of songs. That's the ones we would sing. And the church also had the choir. They were singing on voices. So I had access to a lot of music. There was music everywhere. It was music in church, music at traditional celebrations. That's where you hear the folk music in Romania. At parties, weddings, even at funerals. And then there was the classical music school. So we had access to Western music mainly. Yeah.
So I guess my last question for you might be about self-care, because you're a very busy soloist. You're touring a lot. So how do you cope with that, finding time to learn scores and take care of yourself?
Well, I'm always learning. I also travel a lot. So I used my traveling also as a place to work. And I find it fascinating to work on planes, on trains. In fact, I've memorized works on a plane, memorized piano sonatas on a plane. And I think it's a great place. You know, it changes. It's always good as a musician to change environment. It really helps the brain to process things differently. So from that point of view, it's been relatively easy. But in terms of self-care, this is something that I had to learn in recent years, because as a pianist, I also spend a lot of time practicing the piano, which is a physical activity. And then when you research the music and you do a lot of, you have to sit at your desk, work on your computer, that's also sitting down. So there's not much exercise involved. So I had to develop a personal regime of, I wouldn't say training, but of keeping my body fit and keeping my hands in shape to serve me in the years to come. And I do a lot of yoga, well, light things. I'm not into extreme workout. I do yoga. I love to walk a lot. I have a huge park very close to where I live, and I do long walks almost on a daily basis. Sometimes I do cardio. I've also changed my diet in recent years. So I used to be a great big sweet tooth. So I had to make all the adjustments that, you know, when I started seeing the consequences of working hard or not having enough sunshine on my hands, then I had to take great measures. And I can say I'm in a very good place now physically. So.
That's great to hear and great advice. Well, it's been such a joy to have this opportunity to sit down and speak with you today. So thank you.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please do share this with your friends and check out episodes you may have missed at leahroseman.com. If you could buy me a coffee to support this series, that would be wonderful. The link is in the description. Have a wonderful week.